Welcome to part one of our conversation with Dr. Laurel Parnell, a leading expert on the extremely effective therapeutic tool and technique of EMDR, or eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy. Dr. Parnell's work is not only very effective in healing the effects of PTSD, but also a very powerful transpersonal or spiritual technique that manifests the deep essential qualities of the human soul. Welcome to Deep Transformation, Self, Society, Spirit, life-enhancing, paradigm-rattling conversations with cutting-edge thinkers, contemplatives, and activists, with Dr. Roger Walsh and John Dupuy. Join us in the evolutionary fast lane as we take a deep dive into transformational practice, peak experience, profound understanding, powerful contribution.
I'm Roger Walsh, and our co-host is John Dupuy, author of the award-winning book, Integral Recovery. And our guest today is Dr. Laurel Parnell, who's one of the world's foremost EMDR, that's eye movement desensitization reprocessing, therapists. She is not only a psychologist and a therapist, but one of the world's foremost EMDR trainers. And in addition, has written several books on this topic. The first one, Transforming Trauma, EMDR, the Revolutionary New Therapy. And after that, some of the key ones have been Rewiring the Addicted Brain, an EMDR-based treatment model, and Attachment-Focused EMDR, Healing Relational Trauma. In addition to all this, Laurel is a very deep spiritual practitioner. He's done years of intensive practice in a variety of traditions, most notably probably some of the Hindu practices, the non-dual work, and guides appropriate clients through the spiritual openings that can occur in EMDR. And that's one of the things we want to explore in particular today, just how this therapeutic approach can open people to very profound transpersonal experiences. I can speak from personal experience here because I've been working with Laurel for some 20 years. 20 years ago, I've been teaching, of course, the psychotherapy courses at the University of California for psychiatrists there. I knew the literature on psychotherapy pretty well when I ran across the EMDR literature with its remarkably rapid improvements in trauma symptoms. I was blown away, and I figured I need to try this. And by good fortune, I was able to get into Laurel's practice and to work with her, and have continued to request consultations periodically ever since. And in my own experience, some of those consultations have led to very deep spiritual openings, which I'm very grateful for. So, Laurel, it's a gift to have you here and have the chance of exploring these topics. Perhaps we can begin with, not everyone's familiar with EMDR, of course, so maybe you can tell us exactly what it is.
So, EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, was developed by Francine Shapiro, who is a Bay Area psychologist, back in the 80s. What she stumbled on was the power of alternating bilateral stimulation, and she found it with eye movements. So the idea with EMDR is that we activate the memory network where the trauma is stored, with the image, the emotions, the body sensations, and any of the beliefs that got locked in at the time of the trauma. And then we add alternating bilateral stimulation. In the early days, it was all eye movements. And we've gone beyond eye movements for over 20 years. So initially it was eye movements. And what that seems to do is the activation of the memory network and then the adding of the bilateral stimulation sets off a rapid processing effect. So thoughts, feelings, body sensations, information begins to rapidly process through the nervous system. It's really a mind-body free associative process. And what we find is that you move towards health and wholeness. So what's been held in a kind of dysfunctional way that with erroneous thoughts and feelings, like this belongs to me, this is who I am, you keep feeling like the memory is still present, it's still alive. it moves it to what Jean Klein called objective memory. It feels like it happened in the past. It no longer feels connected to you. It feels like you're reading about it in the newspaper. So it really has this global perspective. So what it does, so EMDR, traditional EMDR, is a trauma therapy that works to help the mind and body rapidly process information that's been frozen in time, taking us to what we call an adaptive resolution, or taking us to health and wholeness. So that's kind of a, and it's, there's protocols, there are procedures, there are ways of doing this. And of course, this was developed in the 80s. We've evolved it over time. And so your experience of it is in kind of an evolved form, obviously, but it's highly researched for PTSD. It's one of the most researched therapies for post-traumatic stress disorder, highly efficacious, and it's just amazing. No, I've been teaching this since 1995 and practicing and using it, and it's still just so, so wonderful to be able to help people.
It's interesting that what seems to have been discovered with EMDR is a way of more rapidly processing experiences. And in some ways, this is a refinement of what psychotherapy and contemplative practice is about. So much of it, of what they're both about, is bringing awareness to that which has not been fully experienced previously. And what EMDR seems to add with its bilateral stimulation is something which tends to speed the resolution of particularly unprocessed, painful materials. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there's a humanistic psychology theory that underlies it, that we have a natural healing system that's been disrupted by the trauma experience, and that it freezes the information in fragmented form, so to speak, unintegrated, unprocessed form. And that the addition of the bilateral stimulation allows that information to become unlocked and move towards health and wholeness. So it's profoundly integrative. So a lot of therapies have similar theories, but what we find in EMDR is that it works on a mind-body very rapidly. So all kinds of information that is locked in ways you never would have thought, because our theories really trap us. You know, when you have theories about something, you're creating constructs. And oftentimes what we find are things are associated and linked in ways you never would have thought of in a million years. So it gets at these underlying things and allows them to rapidly move out. So EMDR clears what isn't true. So this is kind of coming back to, you know, I have a very strong Buddhist foundation. So in, you know, in Buddhism, we have a sense of a true self, and our true self is that which is ever present. And the expression of our true self is love and compassion and joy and wisdom, these kind of essential qualities. And my view is what happens is that when we have a traumatic or experience, let's say, it creates clouds that obscure our expression and our knowing of our true self. And what Jean Klein, one of my teachers, would say is the ego is a contraction in the mind and the body. You feel it. It's like a holding, a contraction in the mind and the body. So what we do with EMDR is we look for where those places are that are contractions, these places of holding, and we light them up, and then we add bilateral stimulation, alternating eye movements. It can be tapping. It can be anything that stimulates both sides of the body or the brain. And what happens is it moves it out. So that which isn't true self clears out. Hatred, anger, fear, sadness, these kinds of things that are like the clouds move out. And always where we end up is this expression of true self, which is joy and love and a free flow of energy, compassion. And so you can't remove something that's true, but that which isn't part of true self just gets stronger, eliminates. And so we're always looking, and this is my view of EMDR, this is how I do it based in this perspective, is I'm looking for the places of holding. Where are those clouds still? Where are they located? Is it a body sensation? Is it a construct, a belief of some kind? And then we focus on those places and they evaporate like the clouds that are obscuring the sun. And it's just amazing. So really the role of the therapist is to align with and resonate with the true self that is within the client. At the same time, intuiting and recognizing where the blocks are. And then finding where those places are and allowing them to unfold as they will. This is kind of my view. This is my transpersonal way of working, as you know. It's more like that.
You know, I trained also to be a therapist and back in the day. And one of the discouraging things was that we learned that through analysis or psychotherapy, you could uncover the subconscious material that was causing the pain, you know, and a lot of work. And that's good to know what's ailing you is a good thing, but it wouldn't integrate it. It wouldn't heal it. So you could do all this work and you know, I think there are some benefits in it, but it just didn't quite take it far enough. Boy, I wish we would have known about it then. And I've had friends that were in school with me that have used it in their practice, been using it for years and swear by it. So
it really changes it. And in a way, what our theories and our talk therapy, which are useful, of course, because they kind of give us a mapping. We're allowed to, you know, we're putting words to experience that kind of thing, but they don't get at this deeper level of these places that are holding. And EMDR very rapidly moves them out. And what's been so interesting over the years is clients and I will have our ideas about what something will be associated with. And we go in, and it has nothing to do with what we think it is. So I hold theories and concepts and all of that very lightly. And then we discover what really is, you know, underneath it. And more often than not, it's really a surprise. For example, we're always looking for these big traumatic experiences that are then linked to present day symptoms and problems. And there are all kinds of what we call small T traumas, being hurt in childhood by a friend, you know, being small bullying experiences, misunderstandings that can also go into our nervous systems in really dramatic ways that begin to create a negative self-construct, and you know, a harmful self. I'm not good enough. I'm a loser. I'm, you know, whatever these things are, but they may not be linked to things our parents did to us. They could be all kinds of things. And so what happens in the work is we discover what in the past is linked to whatever it is, and we process it with EMDR, and out all this stuff disappears, and stuff that's been held for a lifetime, you know, is gone. And the person is living in this very free, fluid way without the constraints of these old beliefs, but they weren't connected to big stuff. Often they're connected to little stuff that you would never find in a history because they weren't noted as really significant. So This is the fun of what we do with this. To me, it's really open-minded discovery of what it is that's creating these blocks to living fully for the individual.
Yeah, that certainly makes a lot of sense. You're reminding me of a couple of things. First, the beautiful quote from Carl Jung that learn your theories as well as possible, but set them aside when you come in contact with the living soul. Yeah. And it seems like that's one of the implications of what you're saying, that our, you know, our theories, our concepts, and of course, contemplative traditions would agree with you, theories have their role, and one needs to get to the either preconceptual or transconceptual experience, direct experience, to actually affect transformation for the most part. And I'm also struck by what you said about the unpredictability. And I think that's one of the joys of depth psychotherapy, that you never know what's going to come out. And I would say perhaps in my own experience, having been through a number of therapies and gained significantly from them, I think that's one of the things that really stands out about the EMDR work, that it really can take you within a single session to places you had no idea you were going to go. And it seems like in your work, what I take from both your writings and my personal experience of you, that much of the way you operate is based on a very profound trust in the psyche. Could you talk to that?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting because it's an embodied trust. It's not a conceptual trust. And I think it's in large part due to my clinical experience. You know, I was trained in 1991. I've been using this extensively in my practice since that time. So I have thousands of sessions, and as well as my own personal EMDR. So when I was trained back in 91, I was blown away by how powerful this was. And it was like, oh my gosh, all the therapy done in the past, kind of like I have the map of what's down there, but none of it has really changed how I feel inside. That kind of the behavioral kind of structural part hadn't really shifted. And I had no idea how to do that. So getting my own EMDR was profound because it really allowed me to learn what that is from the inside out. And then working with people over the years, you just see that you drop into, I think it's who called it kind of don't know mind, you know, that mind of not knowing, of being comfortable with not knowing. And Alan Watts called it the wisdom of insecurity, right? I love that because it's really, there's wisdom in not knowing and being comfortable with not knowing and allowing the process to unfold. And frankly, Roger, I think it takes a certain personality of a therapist to be comfortable doing this work.
Yeah.
Because you let go of control and knowing, and you drop into the trust of process, and you align with the wisdom inherent in the client. And you ride, some of it is super intense. You kind of ride the waves of a big affect. You go in these kind of, it's almost like journeying with somebody, but you've got yourself very grounded in the present as you're aligned with that, and you ride through it. And I don't know how I'm going to arrive at, you know, at the place of wholeness, but I trust that we'll get there. And so there's something about that. And I think when people watch me work, I've got a whole series of demonstration videos of working live with people that we have in our, you know, on our website, and we show and we use them for teaching purposes. You see the kind of embodied trust of process. And I think it's from lived experience of session after session after session, going in and going, I have no idea how we're going to get through this. You know, working with somebody who's had some of the most horrific childhood sexual or physical abuse experiences and thinking, how are we going to get through this one? And not knowing, but I don't have to know. I know that I can be present in the moment and I can ride through this. And also I can stay open to my own intuition. And I think this is part of that, that what's important in any good therapy is the right brain connection between therapist and client. And that's also where your intuition opens up. And it's also where meditation practice is so important. So, you know, basic sitting practice of opening to big space, of coming to your body, recognizing what's arising in consciousness, all of that is so open and all so important. It also opens your intuition. So you can notice when something arises in intuition and, you know, do I ask a question? Do I follow this? And so it allows for more of this smoothness. Okay, I think we're stuck. I'll check in with the client and then I'll ask, what do they need? And then we'll find a way to unhook something. So I think the opening to intuition, to being present in your own body, the therapist, is really important. So much of that comes back to the importance of basic spiritual practice for the therapist to be really good at this. I mean, you can learn the basics of EMDR and you can work with some things, right? But to work with the vaster, you know, the vaster stuff, the spiritual stuff, the deep childhood trauma stuff, I think the more the therapist has done their own personal work, their own EMDR work, their own meditation practice, it just opens them to a whole broader skill set and a way of being able to be present with people.
That makes total sense. And of course, if you look at the psychotherapy outcome research, it's very clear that the most important factors by far in most psychotherapy are first the quality of relationship. And second, the qualities, personal qualities of the therapist and the client and what they bring to the therapy. And for most therapies, and here EMDR may be an exception, for most therapies, those are way more important factors than the particular techniques that's used. And we've had decades of internecine warfare between psychoanalysis, behaviorism, cognitive therapy, etc., all claiming to be the one true way, or at least many of their adherents claim it to be the one true way. And yet that's not what the research shows. And you're pointing to the very important idea, which unfortunately is not widely known yet within the therapeutic community, though it's beginning to, is that there are ways of cultivating the very qualities such as empathy, sensitivity, intuition, etc., that are so central to being a good therapist, and it's possible to cultivate them through contemplative practice.
Yeah, I was going to say in preparation for this conversation, Laurel, I went to YouTube, and I found an example there of you working with a woman. And I was, it's about 5 minutes, it's not very long, but immediately I was impressed. Although this woman's good, because you had such empathy, intuitive intelligence. You were right there and you could tell, because it had two cameras that were sitting her and you, that she felt really safe and being held. As you mentioned, that seems to be an essential part. And yeah, you got there. And one of the other insights of looking into this, it's so kind of not amazing, but it's just so life-affirming in our practice, our depth practice and work affirming, that when you work through, however this integrates, you know, it's all kind of a mystery. I mean, you can have theories about it, but it works, that qualities of essence, which Hamid or H.A. almost calls it, begin to emerge of love, compassion, joy, just by doing this work, and they come of themselves. That tells you a lot about our deeper human nature.
I think it does. So I came to EMDR 1991. I was trained by Francine. And I immediately began to have these experiences in my own experiences, as well as with my clients. And they were having transpersonal experiences right and left. It was just naturally unfolding. I wrote an article for the Journal of Transpersonal Psychology, really outlining what I was seeing and experiencing. And then at the time, I was teaching at California School of Integral Studies. And I began to teach EMDR in the doctoral program there. I did that for 2 years, 1995 and I think 1996 or seven. And one of my students from that class then decided to do base his doctoral dissertation on the article that I wrote. And he queried other EMDR therapists to see if they had also noticed the kind of transpersonal experiences I had written about in my article. And yes, many of them were reporting very similar experiences. They were things like, the most common experience is that of compassion for self and others. So the typical result of EMDR is compassion for self and others. It's like the heart opens. There's a sense of no longer identifying with what happened. And also the desire for revenge or anger or any of that just dissolves out. And so typically a client will arrive at, what happened to me does not define who I am. And all this upwelling of self-love comes, just wow. And it's a very common experience. And it's not something the therapist is directing the client to do at all. It just happens on its own, including what I call objective forgiveness. So how do I put it? I'm not a fan at all of any kind of contrived, like, you should experience this or you should forgive somebody, because I think it's phony. And then it really keeps a person from fully processing through all that they're experiencing and feeling. But what was happening was some people were arriving at forgiveness for the people who had harmed them. They had a non-sentimental kind of forgiveness. It was, as you see things as they are, this broader context arises. And this sense of forgiveness would come. So anyway, Raymond Turpin was the name of my student, and he was finding many of the same things that I had written about in my article, but especially compassion for self and others. And I think that's quite extraordinary, isn't it? How many therapies, trauma therapies or any therapies, that is the typical endpoint of the therapy. Is that?
Yeah, it's very rare. Gosh, there's a lot here. First off, just to acknowledge how rare, in, at least from what I know about therapy, and you know, I've taught the psychotherapy for a lot of years, how rare that as an endpoint of therapy is. You know, there can be some forgiveness, some resolution, some coming to terms with occasionally forgiveness, but often, and in some, I think you've written and would agree, some tragic cases, there's a sense of, okay, the person comes to feeling, moving from feeling like a victim to a survivor. That's the end point. Well, yeah, it's an end point, but it's not exactly as far as one can go.
No, even the survivor, it's like what they arrive at is this is something that happened in my history that doesn't define me. It takes its place among all the things that happens in one's life. It's kind of like the lens gets very big and very broad, and you see that this is something that you've learned from, that's informed your life, that has affected you, but it doesn't define you. And that is a typical endpoint.
Laurel, so a couple of what feel like really important questions here. Certainly this has happened a lot in your work with people. And from the research project you talked about, sounds like it's happening with at least some other EMDR therapists. Do you have any idea of what EMDR therapists this happens with, and are there some that transpersonal spiritual experiences don't arise with?
This is such a good question, Roger, and I've really thought about it. I think that compassion for self and others arises universally, no matter what the background is with the EMDR therapist practicing. I think some of the other deeper experiences of dissolution of self and I think some of the bigger experiences are affected, I think, and I don't have research to support this, by the quality of the therapist who's working with the person. So for example, if a therapist doesn't believe the person they're working with can really get over something, can really heal from it.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
I watch this all the time in my training. So, you know, we do trainings and we have practice sessions. And we will regularly see the therapist go, well, anger is a normal endpoint for this. You need your anger. Or, oh, yeah, grief, you should be feeling grief. That's a normal experience. And so what we'll find is the therapist is limiting the client because of their own limited experience, rather than say, well, let's just see if we can go a little further. Not, you got to keep going. It's like, well, let's just see what else can happen if we keep going. Kind of this open inquiry, open curiosity, let's see. And I found people open to whole other bigger, broader dimensions because I've just said, let's see, let's keep going. So where I'll go and the people and my other trainers and consultants will go, well, let's just see where we can go. Not forcing them, but let's just see. Whereas other therapists who have their theories about what is possible, you know, no, you can't do this. You can never heal from this. Or they haven't themselves, so they won't allow their clients to keep going. So you'll see this. And then there's this whole other area of the multidimensionality that I've really been exploring the last 4 years. And this is where other things will start showing up. And this is where EMDR starts to blend with what we find in shamanic practices all over the world. So with EMDR, what we're doing is we're using alternating bilateral stimulation. So we're using, it can be tapping on the hands, it can be tapping like this, it can be auditory stimulation, it can be drumming. And so for some people, what happens is it opens the veil to altered states of consciousness, and they begin to have altered states of consciousness. So what I will say is I want to differentiate, if I can, between experiences that are really truly spiritual, where you open to who I am is not this conditioning, and you have a sense of pure consciousness, and you abide in that consciousness, and you feel filled with love and presence. So that's where EMDR, so what I'll say is what EMDR can do is it can clear the conditioning and it brings us to our true self and this bigger consciousness that holds everything. But it also opens people to spiritual, transpersonal kinds of dimensions of reality. So they will have, many people will have after-death communications with loved ones. Suddenly the loved one is in the room, or somebody they've killed or who's died will be in the room with them and they feel them communicating with them. Or they'll have a power animal show up, or an angelic being, or an ancestor, or there's so many other kinds of things that will show up. And if the therapist freaks out and goes, that's not okay, or no, you're psychotic, or it can't be your dead relative talking to you, this is just in your mind, this is going to shut it down. And people for, you know, millennia have been pathologized for having these kinds of experiences. So I think part of what happens for some people is the alternating bilateral stimulation acts very much like drumming and rattling does, where it can open these other dimensions. So these other kinds of experiences will start showing up. And it's like a portal will open up to these kinds of things. And this is where it's so important that therapists be comfortable with this and know how to work with this in a way that's not pathologizing to the client. And certainly, these things are not meant. Sometimes these are like spirits that'll show up. They're not meant to be integrated. They're not ego states. Sometimes they're ego states, but sometimes they're not. They're energies. They could be from, it can be from so many different things. So this is where we're really opening different dimensions of reality in the use of bilateral stimulation that is known about for thousands of years, but EMDR is opening these things up. And like many, many years ago, I started having this happen. A client of mine who is processing the death of her brother suddenly looked at me, complete shock, because he showed up in the room. She was seeing him along with her baby sister, who had died when my client was 12 and the sister was 2. The brother was newly deceased. So she sees them. And she's freaking out. She's going, what have you done to me? She's saying, what have you done to me? Like, I didn't do anything. What did you do to me? And what does this mean? And I said, well, what does it mean to you? So this is what's also important. The therapist does not interpret. The information, the wisdom resides in the client. So I don't say, this is what this is. I say, what does it mean to you? And she said that they're together, they're okay, and I'll see them someday. And I just said, go with that. And I added bilateral stimulation so she can take in the message she's receiving. That was the first one that happened. I've had so many of these over the years, I can't even tell you.
Yeah. Wait on, let's stop the moment there, because you have put out so much. And I just want to make sure. Yeah, there are a lot of one-liners that we could go into for the rest of the time, okay. but let's just summarize some of these, because there are some really important themes. First off, you pointed to the fact that in psychotherapy, not only EMDR, but maybe especially EMDR, there is the possibility of deeper transpersonal spiritual experiences, ones way outside normal experience. That's a possibility. But it's only a possibility with a particular kind of therapist, a therapist who is open to these possibilities. And you pointed to the incredible importance of self-limiting beliefs. You spoke of them, of course, they're incredibly important for all of us, but you spoke of the importance of them for therapists. And there's a whole field of research, as you know, interpersonal expectancies, which basically says, what you expect from other people is very likely to come true. And that our beliefs about ourselves are self-fulfilling prophecies, but our beliefs about others yes. tend to be self-fulfilling prophecies too. And there's even a term for the limiting beliefs, the golem effect. That is, if you have negative beliefs about a person, they are likely to, there is evidence, they are likely to, in some ways, live into and express our limiting beliefs. So the importance of this in therapy, which is the central thing you've been emphasizing, so important. And you emphasized the similarities of some of what you're finding with, well, spiritual traditions from around the world, but particularly the shamanic tradition with its emphasis on drumming and oral stimulation as a key factor. And I love what you said towards the end there, and I want to make sure this doesn't get lost. The therapist doesn't interpret. Well, that's a radical idea for a lot of therapists. Yeah. And it's not to say that interpretation can't be helpful at times, but the emphasis you give it, what does that mean for you? Seems like so important.
I'm so glad you're emphasizing this, Roger. With EMDR, we don't make interpretations. Wow. This is absolutely, absolutely essential. Because this is funny. In my trainings, right, we're facilitating practice and we say, we call it the magic duct tape. We go around and the therapist wants to do reflective listening or they want to make an interpretation. And we say, oh, we're going to put the magic duct tape on your mouth so you don't do that. We try to make a joke out of it because therapists feel like they have to be doing something or they're not earning their keep, right? They're not earning the money for their session. It's like, no, it's more a shift into being rather than doing. And it's aligning with the wisdom inherent in the client and resonating with that. That's very powerful. I think when you feel the person who is your therapist is connecting to your higher self, your true self, your inner wisdom, and they're not constricting you and seeing you as your conditioning, right? So the way in which is like, I hold the wisdom, the truth, the clarity in the client, and I see where the hurt parts are. So I'm holding both simultaneously. But that's so powerful because if you're with somebody and they're constraining you by they're going, oh, well, this person has got this problem and this problem and this problem, and they're judging you and you feel that, it really doesn't make you feel safe. But if they're aligning with your true self, that strengthens in that resonant field. I mean, this is where this interpersonal neurobiology, I think, is so important because the client feels the therapist seeing them in their highest self. And when you feel that, trust evolves and that comes foreground more, right? Instead of background, that comes foreground. And also the places that where the holdings are also apparent. So, but they're not seen as defining who the person is. See, this is where non-dual spirituality and Buddhism and all of these things that are such important influences in my life is you just see, and it's obvious that the conditioning does not define the person because all of that dissolves out. It dissolves out and they're left with their true self. But as you know, each person is unique. There's the unique expression that each of us has where this true self manifests. So there's that alignment with that. And, you know, what we find as a result of EMDR is that whatever the person's natural proclivities are start to be expressed. If they're a singer, they're singing. If they're a writer, they're writing. If they're a dancer, they're dancing. Whatever it is that is their natural expression will start to come forward.
So creativity is enhanced.
It just comes out, whatever it happens
to be.
It's just so fun. One woman I work with who was a singer, but she wasn't singing because of the trauma from her background. She started producing CDs and going on the road. And it was like, oh my God, you couldn't imagine that she never could do that before because it was so natural for her. So these are some of the things that I think are just so important. And then no interpretation, because so what I was saying in my training, I watched a therapist make an interpretation for the client that I'm thinking, oh, that was really smart. That was really an intelligent interpretation. And then she made the interpretation, and then she told the client to go with that. And it took her completely down the wrong road. It was completely wrong. And then we had to bring the client back and have them reconnect to themselves and then find what really was true. And I thought, no, no interpretations. It's really allowing that which is within the person to unfold as it needs to unfold. And as soon as you make an interpretation, you're disempowering your client. You're taking the power. And this work is all about empowering our clients, about helping them develop the sense, what I call a felt sense of truth, this inner knowing that we refer them back to over and over again. And that gets stronger. And then they live with that in daily life. They can then go, oh, this doesn't feel right, or this does feel right, because they've developed that strength inside. If the therapist is telling the client, they're taking the power away from them. They're the ones that hold the information. So it's all about inquiry, about redirecting the client back to themselves, helping them strengthen that part of themselves. So no interpretations. It's about inquiry.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize how radically different that is from so many therapies.
Oh, I know. You know, one of my big influences, Roger and John, is Alice Miller. Do you remember Alice Miller?
Oh, God, yes.
Child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every therapist should read this. When I was in graduate school in the 80s, we were all reading her. We were all recognizing ourselves in her description. And I just come back to her because what she was saying is that when the therapist, and I'm totally going to paraphrase because I haven't read this in such a long time, but so many people are injured growing up because in order to be okay and not be abandoned, they had to be who their parents wanted them to be. So in the process of doing that, there's an abandonment of self and going out and who do you want me to be? How do you want me to be? What are my likes? What are my dislikes? All of that. And then what happens is a strong, integrated sense of self doesn't develop because self is all dependent on the other. And there's always a fear of abandonment. If I don't do it right, I'm going to be abandoned. I won't be loved. I'll lose love. So what happens when you have a therapy that makes interpretations and has a theoretical structure that doesn't allow the person to know what they know and express what they know, you're re-injuring them the way in which they were injured as children. So it's not healing. And then the other way, a therapy that asks the client, what do you need? Or what are you experiencing? And refers them back and then is listening and attuning to them, that's profoundly reparative. And so because of my own childhood and my own mother, who was very much needed me to be her therapist, Alice Miller was revelatory to me because it was like, oh, that's what this is. And so I'm very sensitive when somebody imposes something on me or somebody else. I reject it and I feel it's a boundary violation. And then like, I'm like, no, ask the person, don't tell them. Discover what's true for them and help them discover what's true for them. So it's very strong in how I teach and what I feel is so important. And this kind of circles back to shamanic work because so much of the neo-shamanism takes the power and the shaman does the journeying for the person rather than teaching the individual to discover for themselves and to develop their own capacities. So I feel strongly that therapies that are empowering and help the person come to what their own truth is, their own inner guidance, are what I want to follow or what I'm interested in. Because we want people to become independent, not dependent on the therapist.
Stay tuned for part two of our conversation with Dr. Laurel Parnell, where we continue to explore the transpersonal and transformational nature of EMDR therapy. Thank you very much for being a part of this conversation. We hope that you were moved as we are moved being part of it ourselves. We'd also like to say that this is being funded by Roger and myself. It comes out of our pockets. So if you would like to help us to mainly to get this podcast out to more people, because the bigger audience have, which is steadily growing, but the more people we can reach and the more marketing we can do, the more positive effect we can have on the world. So we've done a couple of ways, but we'd like you to buy us a cup of coffee. Very simple. And I do that with podcasts that I support, and I find it's very satisfying. So thank you for your help. Thank you for your presence. And thank you for all you are and all you do. We love you.